Say at the beginning of this, the task force that Representative Buckley and I just left about an hour ago, which is on the state budget process, which is actually more of a statutory review task force to look at existing statutes and to basically take out ambiguous language, to take out language that's archaic, and to make sure that the statutes that we have actually correspond to current practices. That task force is actually nearing the completion of its work and should probably complete its work in the next meeting that it has sometime either in October or early November. That task force started late, actually later than anticipated. But this task force was to some degree held up due to that task force. So this task force started considerably late. I think we have seen from some of the complexities of the issues that we're dealing with that it is doubtful that we will complete the tasks in the bill in the time frame given, and we may probably have to do the same thing with that task force that we did with the previous one and actually extend the time in a forthcoming bill in the session and actually get approval from our presiding officers, whoever they might be at that time, to continue the task force. And then we need to probably have a new discussion about a work plan. So we can present something that will not be today, but we do actually have a fairly full agenda today in terms of discussion of some items. I actually am still very much convinced that this next legislative session will be a great laboratory for some of the challenges that we face in capital construction, given the number of requests that I know are on the table. Given the number of actually new areas that the legislature is either being asked to expand greater into or expand for the first time into. So I'll leave it at that. The first item on our agenda is an update on the inventory of state-owned buildings. My understanding, this is both non-education-related buildings and education-related buildings.
To some extent, yes.
Yeah. So who do we go to first? Okay.
Great.
Yeah. I do always have a difficulty pronouncing your husband's name, so you're not going to be any better. So it's Alice?
Vivel.
Vivel.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Co-Chair Devlin, and committee members, Co-Chair Buckley, Senator Ard, and Representative Smith. I'm Alice Vivel. I'm the architect, state architect, and director of facilities planning, and I'm here with my colleague, Daniel Christensen. We both joined DAS in November, and our positions were part of a package that was authorized. It's POPs 117 and 102 in the last legislative session that created the facilities planning unit that's part of DAS. So to begin with, our role is to really provide decision support for leadership about our real estate assets on a statewide basis through comprehensive information and analysis. There's a statutory framework, which you know very well, that supports this. We cataloged about 23 ORSs, 11 DAS policies, EO 1217, and there are more that support DAS's role in this area. What you see there is a summary of ORS 276.094 that basically says that buildings that the state builds needs to be designed to the highest standards of environmental design that contribute to the state and its citizens. And, you know, sub-bullets under there is that our goals are to make sure that we steward our facilities and that they are effective, efficient, and affordable, and they convey the state's identity and aspirations. We do that through maximizing the quality and effectiveness at a minimum physical footprint and cost, and to maximize the impact of the state investment. So those are our overarching goals that we are working for.
Cost. Huh. Well, it's actually existing statute.
So what we are working at is providing a basic understanding of what our real estate assets are and providing the relevant context to understand the decision making. So what that means for us is developing a complete list of our real estate assets, developing a conditions assessment, actually conducting a conditions assessment of the real estate assets so that we can project not only the current needs but future needs. So this is over a 10-year period. And we have a facilities conditions engineering team. So they're architects, engineers, and professional assessors out doing a pilot program with DAS, OLCC, and OIA to evaluate over 4 million square feet of our portfolio. It's a little bit less than 20% of our portfolio. And so they're doing that now. And we hope to come back to this committee in December, if you allow us, so that we can report back on that effort. And as part of that effort, we're also going to be doing a seismic flood risk analysis. So that's going to be delayed a bit, but we're working with our partners in Dogami and at the engineering department at PSU to collaborate on those efforts. The kinds of things we're looking at is the values of the assets, the capacity, functionality, and risk. We are also looking at locational attributes like demographics, geographic issues, political, this is in mapping, economic and social layers. So those are all of the context that we want to be able to bring to bear for your decision making. And included, we are also looking at a total cost of ownership model. We've conferred with our colleagues at Washington, the state of Washington, and they've let us pilot their total cost of ownership model on one of the projects that we are doing. So we tried that out to just see how it worked. And it's pretty interesting, works pretty effectively. So we're looking at maybe developing our own a version of that that might be a little more nimble for our purposes.
Sure.
Thank you. I'm fascinated by that idea. Do you have any information you can send us on the pilot that you did on this?
Absolutely.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. The current initiatives we're doing is one is a data integration project. That is really important for us to have a baseline understanding of what it is that we have. We have a lot of different databases, but they were all built around different purposes. So the challenge is that the data doesn't actually align. There's different values for, building square footage, for example, depending upon which data source you look at. And there's, this is not unusual. Every institution with any kind of history has this challenge. And similarly with the costs of the value of the assets. There is one value in one and another value in another. As part of our facilities condition assessment, we are asking the engineering team to come up with their calculated replacement value. So if you were to replace it in kind, what would the cost of it be? The value of that is not just for, facility planning, but obviously for your risk portfolio. How much should we really insure our portfolio for? That is, this is all relevant data that's needed by different kinds of groups depending upon what they're using, what they're looking at. So, this actually is a huge effort, believe it or not. Thank you. So it's been a challenge, and we're continuing to work on it. We have a proposal in front of the CIO to create a data mart for this information that would allow not only the facility planning unit and our peers to look at this information, but everybody else that needs this kind of information, emergency management planning, hazards planning, the Department of Energy. So there's all kinds of folks that actually need this building and real estate locational information. So it's really an interesting process, and a lot of people are very interested.
We have a question here.
Please.
Do you use videotape quite a bit to document what we're talking about for insurance purposes?
We use photographs.
Okay.
But videotape as in walking?
Well, it's just, it's common practice in a house now to videotape what you have and kind of so that they see the kind of the lay of the land, if you will.
Right.
Okay.
Well, we'll show you some of the tools we have as we go a little bit further.
Okay.
That I hope will be able to answer some of your questions. Oh, I'm sorry.
You can go back.
Yeah. The other thing that we're going to be showing you today is some of our pilot work on visualization and communication tools. One is really not a pilot, which is using our ESRI GIS platform to convey information and put together executive dashboards for operations and maintenance and anything else that you want to look at that's associated with facilities. But the true pilot project that we're doing is a 3D visualization project. So we'll show you that a little bit later. One question that you asked at the last meeting, which is a really central question, is what is deferred maintenance? And how do we stand on deferred maintenance? So actually, Daniel and I have a lot of experience with deferred maintenance because before coming to this position, we were both at the Oregon University system and managed at the system level an understanding of that overall portfolio. And a big piece of it was understanding the deferred maintenance of the system and the seismic risk. So we bring that perspective to this portfolio. So deferred maintenance in our budget instructions, and I ask you to look at the highlighted areas, is really maintenance that wasn't performed when it needed to be performed, replacement or maintenance, and it results in the diminished value of the asset and actually the diminished functionality. And we have in our budget instructions like five different ways to slice and dice it. In the future, what we are going to suggest doing, and actually what we're going to do for the next biennium, is organize it by three simple, clear priorities, which are listed here. What is currently critical, meaning what are life safety issues, what must be done now to keep the facility operational, what is required to meet current code, meaning that nothing is grandfathered in, that sort of thing, where you absolutely must do these things, that's priority number one. What is potentially critical, these are things that are near the end of your useful life that you really need to replace. But, you know, again, not quite as critical. And what is the third priority is what you should be doing, but you don't have to do this minute. And what, through the facilities conditions assessment, what we're getting is not just what our current need is, but a projection over a 10-year period. So that we can actually do predictive modeling about if you invest X, what is the impact, and vice versa to help guide us to what level of investment we should really be making.
Can I ask just as an example, I'll use two different examples, an HVAC system is still functional, but we know it's got a short lifespan left. It might fit into priority two. But a failing roof that could potentially result in collapse or even moisture getting inside the building and causing significantly more damage than just the roof. Would that be more like one? It's not necessarily, someone could theorize that the damage may not happen if it's leaking. Obviously, I mean, we probably had a number of critical items in the state capitol, particularly in the wings, in the hearings rooms not that long ago, because of issues of them constantly leaking. How do you make really the judgment on those of what's, they're nice terminology, but
right.
Is it in the eye of the beholder, or is it?
Well, this is an excellent question, Co-Chair. What the model that we are using weights four different elements: the type of the deficiency, the cause of the deficiency, the timing of the, you know, when it actually happens, and the mission criticality. And I think the mission criticality is really important to understand. So not every building has the same mission criticality. So it may be that one building, you know, requires a higher level of performance than another building. So I think these are all factors that weigh into this judgment. But this is, you know, this is done collaboratively with the assessors and with the agency and with us. So I think it's a pretty comprehensive model that allows us to look at these issues and address them.
Yeah, Senator Jones.
Yeah, I would like to take it one step further. For me, I think between priority two and priority three is kind of the essential line, because anything that priority three, I would assume that they're doing on a routine basis. Now, I give you an example: moss on a roof. We had one time that they wanted to do deferred maintenance, treatment of moss on a roof. Sorry, I just think that that's something that's done routinely, and you're obligated to do that. So I agree with Senator Devlin that the definitions, and because we're going to draw a pretty, at least I think we want to draw a pretty firm line saying, okay, give colleges as an example, universities, you are expected to do these sort of things. You know, then if it falls into category one or two, then you can come talk to us about deferred maintenance.
Well, your example of moss on a roof, I think, is a very good one. So the next thing I'd like to just show to you is the kind of analysis and information that we are putting together to help understand the overall portfolio. So the first thing I should say is that the data that you're looking at is not correct. It is, you know, again, this is an iteration of our process and our aggregating data. So the intent of the charts that you're looking at is to illustrate the kind of information that we're putting together, but not to actually focus on the actual number.
Okay. So the numbers probably are off because of your data issues, but in general, because I think we're going to come back to this issue, and it's kind of, I think it's very opportune, actually, the DAS acquired the expertise that they have, given, you know, the chancellor's office changing and having people that have actually done this at the university level for quite a number of years. But do those numbers generally include university buildings also, or?
They will.
They will, okay.
Right. They do not now, but they will.
Okay.
So, as you know, the state's portfolio is about half of the overall portfolio. Once the universities are in, they're the other half of the portfolio, indeed. So what our intent was to, because the universities actually manage that themselves, is that we will summarize their portfolio information.
Yeah.
But the, you know, the actual analysis will really be on the portfolio that is not the university portfolio. Okay, so a slide like this is intended to describe the size, the scope, the age, the location, and the value of the portfolio. Chart shows really that the top 10 agencies by gross square feet is very different from the top 10 agencies by number of facilities. And I think this is a really interesting chart because it shows that transportation, which, you know, is kind of further down on the list, actually has quite a number of facilities, but they tend to be very small. And whereas corrections has very large facilities. So I think it's helpful to understand the nature of the portfolio by looking at the comparison between these two graphs. Another graph that I think is very interesting and helpful is looking at the portfolio by program area. So where are we investing? What programs actually have significant portfolios that are part of their scope of work and is part of their business operations? So for them, this is really a significant piece of what it is that they do. And the bottom chart, that is intended to show between the next biennium, 15 to 17, there is a significant amount of lease square footage that is going to be coming up for renewal. So it's an opportunity for us to think about that holistically across, you know, in terms of lease versus own. Where do those leases happen? So it's a big opportunity for us to develop a strategic approach to our lease portfolio as part of our whole portfolio. Yeah.
Senator Gerard has
a question. I really appreciate that, because now with interest rates at historic lows, it is a time to own versus to lease, and I think that's very wise.
Okay. Also, could I remind Representative Smith is on the phone. So Representative Smith, maybe on mute. See there? Representative Smith?
I'm here, yes.
Okay, if you have a question, please speak up, because you can't obviously raise your hand. So.
No, I appreciate it. I'm just listening in on the conversation. Thank you.
Please proceed.
Senator, I might also add here, we also have a project now that we're working with all the agencies on that we've revamped and are still revamping with some of Alice's input also, our standard approach to renegotiating leases. And
yeah,
we've taken a much more aggressive approach to renegotiating. I heard yesterday that our projected savings over the next 5 to 7 years of the leases we've already renegotiated is in the $10 to $12 million range, just because we've taken a much more aggressive approach. Our historical approach has been, we're long-term lessees, we'll roll the lease over, we take standardized escalators, and we've just said, you know what, the market says we can do better than that these days.
Yeah.
And so we've taken a much more aggressive approach, and what you can really see here is we've got a bubble of time with a significant number of square feet that we have an opportunity either to assess from a number of different criteria that Alice can talk to you about, but also just the opportunity to be more aggressive tenants and just get a better deal. And so we're attempting to do that. I think there are other opportunities, again, that Alice can talk to you about lining up the expiration of leases in the future so that we can do a better assessment of when is it a good time for us to build a building someplace and have a number of our own tenants that can fill that building instantly, and long term our total cost of operation is actually lower. So we haven't done that kind of strategic analysis very well in the past, and so we're attempting to get ahead of that curve here in the next few years.
I would imagine also that you can, if you're in this negotiating position now, that it's pretty clear that if there's other opportunities available and this particular party that's leasing the building to you doesn't want to do improvements as part of the long-term lease, that another party may be willing to.
Absolutely. That's another component. We didn't insist on tenant improvements very often. We didn't get options for us to leave the building short of the end of the lease or trade out lessees in our own operation. We didn't have that ability in our old lease templates. And so we've just become more aggressive. You may hear actually from the landlord community on occasion about us being a little more aggressive. Some members have heard.
I'm not sure how big that bubble is, though. You know, the opportunity that we have, it obviously is right now, but it's all predicated on interest rates staying low. And given our debt to equity ratio of the U.S., somewhere the dollar is going to start taking a nosedive, and we're going to have to prop it up with higher interest rates. So I think sooner better than later on some of these thoughts.
Please proceed. Sorry, Dan.
So what this diagram represents is the other piece of what we're doing is working on developing new tools to really do planning and engagement. So these images are really traditional tools, that tools and processes and analytics for doing planning. But now what we are going to be showing you is ways to do it in a more integrated, simpler way that uses modern technology, iPads, for example, that allows us to expedite the work and increase the engagement, because it allows people to use platforms they already have to readily see the information, instead of having to do it as a, you know, iterative process, keep on going back, and I'll tell you about that as soon as I know later, but actually have the data sets to put together and look at once. There is incredible data in this state. There's really very rich information, but what we're just beginning to pull together is platforms that allow us to pull it together at the same time, around the same table. You know, I think this is the vision for where we would like to go. Now, we're just beginning this effort, but there's a lot of interest in the state. We've got a lot of agencies that have really good, rich information, and we hope to tap into that really broad expertise to help develop a broader, deeper understanding of these decisions that have incredible implications across communities. So, you know, that's really what we want to be able to bring to the state.
Can you use the specs of how a building was designed? I know that maybe something was built in the 30s. That's probably not going to work. But the newer buildings, et cetera, if you put the specs in, it seems to me then you could come up with a more realistic damage estimate on, a 9 earthquake or an 8.5 or whatever. What we can do now with technology is really amazing, and that seems like some place also that we should be headed in.
Senator, you couldn't be more right. We have, I think, a great example that was just constructed was the Integrated Life Sciences Building in the Southwest Waterfront. That building was developed using BIM 3D models. And we have really, through that model, an inventory of every component that is in that building, where it is, photographs of the installation of what's behind the walls. I mean, and for not just the construction of it, which was really streamlined and compressed the schedule and delivered much more cheaply because of using these technologies, for the future operations of the building, they have all of the information electronically. I mean, it's just incredible the savings that achieves.
I can't resist. So we don't have that for the state capitol.
You will.
We will. I know they're doing the work.
Actually, you will. So, you know, but this is what the industry is moving to. This is what we will be moving to as a state. So, you know, we're drilling down on this, and the capacity is building. It used to be that to use these models and to look at the models, you had to have the software to do so. Now, through web and other programs, we can make these things accessible so that you don't actually have to have that program on your desk in order to be able to look and understand what you have. So, you know, it's a brave new world, and we're totally revved for it. But wait, there's more. So here's the dashboard that we talked about. So this already exists. We have a statewide enterprise ESRI license. So we just piggybacked on that to develop this. So what you see there is we have all of the state assets mapped on, you know, on our GIS platform. And what you can do is you can just draw a line around the area that you're interested in, and you can drill down and get the information for that area. So all those kind of highlighted red bubbles that you see, those are, you know, the DAS managed facilities, the state facilities above a million, private leases, state facilities below a million dollar in value, And it also includes our capital request. So you can actually drill down at any location to see what it is. You could take, for example, your district maps, overlay them on this, drill down, and you can see everything that exists and everything that's proposed in your district. That might be useful. So, you know, and then we can create different widgets is what they're called, so that you can look at specific data points that you might be interested in. It's all because each one of these locations has a lot of data attributes that's assigned to it. So it's as good as the data is. And we can start pulling these things together. That's why, actually, we're trying to work actually at both ends. One, we're trying to build up the data capacity to make sure that the data is reliable and it's, you know, consistent, the methodologies are consistent, and it's useful, right? And then at the top, we're trying to develop we are developing the platforms and the communication tools so it's actually usable. So you don't have to search in an archive somewhere, that it's actually there. You can pull it up, you can look at it, you can use it, you can communicate with it. So here's the pilot project that we worked on with Esri and a couple of other users. And I have to say that Daniel Christensen, my colleague right here, he is the mastermind behind this. So his background is he's an Oregon grad from PSU and the University of Oregon, and he understands GIS very well. He learned that and has been using it professionally, so he's bringing that expertise to our department, which is just incredible. So what you see there is a 3D kind of very photorealistic rendering of, you know, the revenue building and its context. Let's see. So here's the Department of Transportation. Here's revenue. I guess this is the yellow lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the green lot, the north.
That's employment.
Right? Oh, that's employment, sorry.
Yeah. DHS,
DHS right here. So you can orient mm-hmm. yourself. And here's the mall, obviously. A lovely sculpture right out our window. So you can understand what you're looking at. Now, what we've layered on here is a floor plan diagram. And what this actually shows is, for the revenue building, a occupancy by floor. So the
red is unoccupied.
And the green is occupied.
So
it allows for, you know, whatever information we have, you know, the AutoCAD information, the BIM information, we can put it into a model like this, and you can use it for planning. You can use it for, you know, evacuation plans, emergency management. If they want to know where is this place in this building, we could use this tool to help people find their way through the building. You know, we just publish that at the front desk and say, you know, use it as a mapping tool. So there are all these kinds of things that are possible because we actually have this technology to do it.
And you can probably, like most GIS systems, you can have the layers to actually have the all the utilities also. I mean, all the underground utilities.
Absolutely. Whatever information exists in that form, we can connect to this.
To follow soil types?
Absolutely.
Okay. Actually, the 3D, you can do subterranean soil types. Mm. You can. That's the purpose, is it stratifies.
Geotech.
We can tilt the view up so you can see under the ground plane.
There is a very practical use for it where agencies and organizations are actually using this to show their sewer electrical lines, right-of-ways, easements, things like that.
Obviously, the capital project. But I think the thing that's interesting here is it gives you its context relative to Willamette University, the mall. So when we're looking at adding anything, changing anything, we have the total context in which to evaluate these things in a way that you don't have to explain. You just look. You know, it's something that everybody just intuitively understands.
I think another thing is you don't really get a plan virtually, especially in the design phase. And you know, I can delete that model and replace it with a virtual capital that's designed, you know, that so we can see it in context. That's a practical use that, you know, I've done before, where you can actually take an architectural rendered model and place it on the site and see what it would look like. That gives people a lot of perspective. So this is just another use.
Eastern Oregon, I don't know if the proposal is going to make it through, but Eastern Oregon has a project that's similar to that, to replace an existing building.
Okay. So, and this is another use for it, and this is just one example, and where we used this to look at the floodplains and how it changes. So you see the Capitol there, right? Here's the North Mall, and here's your mill races, I'm sorry. Here's another one that runs right through Willamette University. Here's the Willamette, right? Here's another one that runs along the edge of the hospital. Okay. This shows a 100-year floodplain. You can see this area is all underwater. Here, it's beginning to get underwater. And the next one, this is the 500-year floodplain. You can see the whole north part of the mall is under. All of this is under. And Michael, you told me yesterday in 1996 we had a 500-year flood, and we know that even the 100-year floods are happening very frequently. It's not every 100 years. It's much more compressed. And Dogami, has been working on refining these maps so that the layers are more accurate with their LIDAR technology.
Doesn't FEMA have... I thought FEMA controlled the maps.
FEMA controls the maps, but they're notoriously inaccurate.
That's reassuring.
They were using a different technology, and we have a more advanced technology
and
now.
FEMA actually mandates us to update the maps. So
FEMA does?
We've done the mapping updates in accordance with FEMA's requirements.
Does it use aerial photos mostly?
A lot of different techniques to use it. Particularly, a big part of this update was the tsunami work along the coast. It was a part of that work. So updating these maps is, quite frankly, very expensive. And it's one of the reasons the maps are notoriously behind in their updates.
Well, you brought some, the tsunami, how do you calculate that? I mean, when you say a tsunami zone, is that to 60 feet? What is the...
I don't know all the details, yeah. Senator, but it's been done with the computer models, which simulate the Cascadia event. And attempt to look where the damage would be. So, and Dogami has those updated maps now, just finished that work.
Some of this work, when you get into it even in more detail, which you probably already have, remember Mr. Jordan was at Metro at one time, and I was at Metro even long before that. And when I was at Metro, we had a grant, and we actually had a staff member. It's an interesting story, so I'll go into it. We had an across-the-board cut in executive branch positions in state government, and since some agencies were required to cut, but they were even required to cut where they were federally funded positions, so we had one or two positions that were actually from Dogami, mm-hmm. that were put to Metro because they were no longer in state government, but they were still federally funded. So that's kind of an interesting thing when you do cuts across the board and require everybody to make cuts. But we did this study, and primarily some of it was on the west side, but a lot of it was on the east side of the downtown area in Portland. And this is 20-some plus years ago. And Metro was probably on the vanguard of GIS systems at that time. And we mandate. We examined the soil types. We examined the geology. We examined all that, and the information was not very well received because there are a lot of unreinforced masonry buildings on the east side, And the information basically said, in some of those areas, one, that the ground will liquefy some of its fill material, and that the buildings won't survive. But I think as we get into this even farther, and we've done some of that work, we'll have more information that's like that, from a public standpoint, from public buildings.
Absolutely.
Okay.
So our future work, you know, what we're suggesting is that we look at redesigning the capital process. You know, looking at our submission criteria and processes to so that they are frankly more relevant, make more sense. We would like to streamline the planning information collection process. Right now, agencies have to submit different planning packages to different groups depending upon what they're looking at, and the information, not surprisingly, doesn't align. It isn't, it's not asking for the information in the same way, so it's very difficult for, you know, the agencies have to recreate it in a different way depending upon who's looking at it. Specifically, I'm talking about the Capital Planning Advisory Board submission, the CPC submission, and the budget submission. So that's a lot of work, unnecessary work for the agencies when a lot of that data exists. And, you know, in the data that we need is sometimes a little different than what is being submitted. Then what we really think would make some sense is to have a informal pre-planning technical support for agencies that need it or that wish to have it. Some agencies have very robust planning groups, and other agencies actually don't and could probably really use it. Things like the siting issues that we look at, and this is one of the big issues for the state, I think that's really a first consideration, but sometimes it seems to be a last consideration. So I think those are the kind of things that we hope to bring to these discussions very early on to make them more useful and to save everybody, you know, effort and concentrate expertise to be available to the agencies. Then we think that it makes sense to have perhaps an expert panel review the proposals, you know, from a technical perspective, make sure that they make sense, you know, that they are reasonable and that they come across as the best way to do work. And then, you know, perhaps there's a leadership panel that takes the information from the technical reviews and uses that, you know, in part at least, to make the prioritization decisions. So I think that that kind of technical review doesn't really happen right now in a robust way, sufficient for the level of investment that really the state does. I think that's, we think it's a useful thing to consider sometime in the future. Another thing that we think we would like to do now, because this drives almost everything, is look at what our space standards are, which, because that is really a definition of what is the demand for space. What's happening across, you know, the country in all different kinds of businesses is that folks are looking at their portfolio and looking at how technology has changed how people work, and people are changing how they work, period, that they're looking at reducing their footprints, their real estate footprints. And I think it's something that this state, and there's already work being done on that. Certain agencies have embraced this and are moving forward with it. Department of Environmental, DEQ, right. Yes, yeah. In their Portland office, I think they're looking at almost a 30% space reduction from their last lease into the current lease, just by being very smart about it.
And also getting out of the west side of downtown, where the lease rates are a lot higher than right? The east side of the river, not very far away.
Yeah. Right.
You know, so just trying to be more strategic about what the business plan looks like and work. You know, work is changing, and different opportunities for different kinds of business lines to utilize their human resource in a different way, usually on a much smaller footprint. And so just trying to get that into the thinking when we have those opportunities to change the way we do business.
GSA has a big effort doing this, you know, the federal government's equivalent arm to us is doing this in a big way. And we've talked to our colleagues at other, you know, every corporation is looking at this issue. States around the country are looking at this issue. So I think it's our hope is that we would be looking at this in a very short time frame and suggesting what makes sense for the state.
That would also probably help us, both the space issue, but in terms of a greater analysis of projects, is that by the time they get to the legislature, and I'm not saying that they're all like this, but occasionally we're asking, you're presenting us a project that's $40 million. All we know is it's a building with this many square feet, and it's $40 million. We don't really know if you actually need that many square feet. We also don't know the real basis of your estimate of the cost for the building,
right,
and whether
it's an archives building or not.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think sometimes you don't actually want to build a I don't want to pick on any retailer, but you don't want something that's going to, you don't want a state building that is like a permanent building that is being built like with a lifespan of 10 to 15, 20 years. Where if, I mean, if you've noticed, I'm not picking on them because I use them too much, but Starbucks actually modifies their sites literally about every 5 or 6 years. They come in and totally, it's mainly to maintain market share and to upgrade their facilities.
Me too.
But you want to actually build facilities that are going to last, depending upon the facility. But we don't usually have that information at the legislative level. I'm not saying it isn't always available. In some cases it is. But in other cases, like, we will select amongst university projects, basically based on this one's $40 million, this one's $20 million, this one's $30 million. How many, can we fit in? How many can we fit into how much resources we have without going back and saying, well, could this $40 million actually be 32? Is there a way to do it for 32? Or do you actually need all of this now? Is there a way it could be phased? We're sort of artificially constrained by this two-year scenario, too, where we basically say, this is how much money we have in this 2 years. These are the projects we can do. If it doesn't fit in, we can't do it. There usually isn't a discussion of phasing it. We get into this constant discussion of binding a future legislature. But it doesn't always make sense, I mean, to approach things that way.
The nature of developing real estate is it is a long-term process, so there isn't a, you know, a natural alignment with the legislative process.
On the other hand, we have at the policy level in the state a fairly robust long-term planning process regarding investment in transportation. We take big transportation projects, we break them down into pre-design work and design phases, we load those into our cash flow projections, we know about how much we're going to be able to spend on actual capital in a certain budgetary time frame. We go through really robust policy level discussions about priorities that have multiple layers in them. So it isn't that we can't do it. I think it's just that we haven't put the tools in place and the processes in place that allow people to come together and see things at different levels. And I think that Alice's proposal here is to allow, first of all, getting the data together and make it easily accessible.
Yeah.
Second, put tools in place that can make that data relevant to the level of the decision that's being made, whether it's a highly technical decision around design or architecture or engineering, or it's really a policy prioritization discussion and what's needed in that to do it. And we're trying to think about how do you do that strategically. One of the things I think you were mentioning, Senator, is in the second line of that last paragraph, and that is, what are the organization's strategic business objectives? We don't come to you really aligning our facility proposal with our long-term strategic business plan and saying, this is why we're going to move to a bigger building, or consolidate multiple agencies in one building, or think about lease versus own, or what are all those different aspects?
Well,
so
I think also
we're trying
to
align those things.
We have an example of that on the e-board agenda, where an agency has done that. It was probably to some degree assisted by the process that you have. And I'm not saying that the legislature is going to agree with everything in that, but OYA has developed the 10-year facilities plan, which is literally the first sort of really broad plan for an agency trying to align its facilities with its mission.
Yeah.
And it's an extremely detailed, and I'm not saying it's perfect or the legislature agrees with it, but it's putting a whole lot of issues on the table that should be thought out a little bit better in the long term rather than just an ad hoc decision basis.
I think it allows policymakers to make a more well-informed decision about aligning mission and business with the physical assets necessary to do that.
Sorry to interrupt your...
Quite all right. So I think, you know, that strategic facilities plan that you just talked about is the next thing that we would like to do, too. So we have a broad, you know, slate of things that we would like to tackle and that we're beginning to tackle, but we are an N of two.
Yeah. You're looking at the entire human resource
that's
devoted to this at the enterprise level.
So what we will also come back to you with is a proposal to ask for funding to continue this work and to, frankly, expand this work. I think the payback is going to be huge. It has the potential to be very significant. And the sooner that we can do it, the better off we will be as a state. So, you know, we're very excited about it. It's, you know, a tabula rasa. It's fantastic. So,
well, and that proposal would actually narrow to some, it'll widen but narrow your scope. I mean, I'll give the example of the Department of Transportation. You know, the list of state facilities that are non-education, like most of them non-education, now we have the Department of Education in a facility, is 35 pages long. And I don't think it's really necessary for you to, some facilities obviously have higher importance than others. So every shed that the Department of Transportation has, that's 1,000 square feet, really isn't important for us to monitor. Somebody else can actually monitor and is supposed to be monitoring, rest stops, which there are usually multiple facilities at rest stops. I mean,
absolutely.
I mean, we're talking about the sort of core facilities. That
absolutely. So, and there are, as you say, you know, building types that are unique to a particular operation. You know, forestry. We're not going to send people out to observation towers. It's only where we bring in expertise that's useful, that can be relevant to this discussion, then we'll bring expertise. But very specific things around business lines that really those agencies know better than anybody else, we have no business there. But office headquarters, probably. You know, hospitals, prisons.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, I think if this process had existed in 1985, that's the year about 85, you would have probably torn down the old mental institution in Pendleton and built a new facility on the site. Now you have a correctional facility that's just celebrating its 100th birthday, the facility.
Are you saying I'm 100?
Well, you're not a correctional facility.
You're giving me a strange look.
But I mean, the facility is 100 years old. It was, and it was never designed to be a correctional facility. And now you're going to live with it for the next at least 50 years. So, okay. You still have more?
No.
Oh, okay.
I have one final question.
Please.
This was on the first slide, the $23 billion figure you had for all the buildings. He asked the question if that included colleges, and that doesn't include any college campuses.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's probably an opportune time to ask for the update on the status of that compilation that's supposed to include both state non-education buildings and state-owned education facilities. So what is the status in terms of working with the university system? And I use that term again. I got to eliminate that.
With our
system.
With
take
our
out system. Take out system. Our
The request is in.
The Magnificent Seven.
The request, we've made the request.
Okay. Well, I know your former employer, and I know some of them have an incredible amount of data. Some of them do not, to be quite honest. Some of them have done a remarkable job. Some don't really have the resources to do a remarkable job. But we should be getting that data. How is that going? I mean, I heard something to the effect that what we were going to get is like risk management data. But if they have facilities plans, I know Western Oregon actually has a pretty good long-range facilities plan. I believe PSU does also.
Actually, I think all of them, I'm speaking of my previous experience a year ago, is that they all have master plans. Every one of them does. It's just a question of how up-to-date the master plans are, and so they're in various phases. I think they actually all have this information.
Yeah.
So it's just simply a matter of compiling it.
And obviously they'll need some resources to be able to do the more detail that you're trying to do on other state facilities. We do have this discussion of ongoing costs of operating. Who's going to lead that?
You're doing the inventory. I wasn't prepared to
It's like an issue that we should just start discussing.
Mr. Co-Chair, the reason that's there is some of the discussion around deferred maintenance today kind of led to a natural discussion as to that is one of our bullet point charges in our task force. And I thought given some of the context and some of the ideas that were presented today about deferred maintenance, that might be a time for us to discuss how we can integrate and whether we should be integrating those costs into some initial planning phases for capital construction projects. And I thought that we would, being that we have the experts here as to how other states have done it, whether or not that's a reasonable thing to do, whether or not, you know, given the different tiers of maintenance over time, how could you potentially even begin to do that? And so that's why that's included. It was meant to be more of a roundtable discussion based on some information that's presented today.
Maybe I could put a couple items on the table and that could maybe start the discussion. In one of your slides where you had the three different levels of deferred maintenance, everything is sort of a two-edged sword. There's no way to hide costs. Even if you say an agency should actually be doing this, then you've got to actually fund the cost of doing this. So the question would become on that third level, which is a fairly controversial question, given how some agencies react to DAS, of do we build that into their rent charge? You know, for some of those more routine things, not just the current operation of the facility, but sort of these more routine things that DAS is going to have to be responsible, should that be built in? It sounds great and sounds like it doesn't cost anything on the other side, but it really does, to build in sort of a sinking fund account into your bond proposal. That means the dollars actually have to be borrowed, at least initially. You may have the growth in the value of those as they're invested. But you're probably going to have to invest them fairly conservatively because you don't want to lose them. But on our lottery bond side, I think Mr. Rocco could comment there, or maybe Mr. McNaughton. On our lottery side, both they're going down, but the other issue is we already have to reserve so much that we can't actually use for actually the construction just to meet the bonding requirements. Can you explain that, Ken, because on lottery or many people don't know how much we have to keep in reserve every time we issue a lottery bond.
I believe you have to keep your last payment.
What payment?
Your last payment has to be put into a reserve account.
Yeah. So if you're going to talk about creating an account for the future replacement of major systems, or the future replacement of the building, you'd be talking about substantially less purchasing power up front, actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, if you want to, Mr. Notton.
Well, I was just going to say, I think it's actually the last year of debt payments you have to fold in as a reserve to make sure that we are actually pay it off.
Yeah.
So.
I'm just going to chime in. I really think general maintenance is a general fund item. That's just me. I mean, if I have a house, that's part of my maintenance to take care of it, and I tend to look at it like the average person would. And I think the state, you know, I think if we got too fancy, that can be a problem. But I do think we need a line in the sand saying, you will do these sort of things. And yeah. And it's not just, you know, you can't, you may, you shall. Because I, you know, it's like you pointed out, certain investments save us a lot of money down the road. And when they put these things off, it costs us. And I think that should be very clear to the agencies what we expect for general maintenance. Now, when it gets to be more than that, then by all means, we don't want twos to become ones. We want to do everything we can to head off the cost. And then when we do start getting twos, then maybe we're looking at a major retrofit, or we're moving out of the building or something to that effect.
Well, I think actually, though, I won't use the university system because it'd be a little bit more complex there, but on this side of the mall, there's newer buildings that have been renovated, but it's the DHS building, I believe. I know it's there. I can see it from right here. But I believe the building is leased from DAS, in a sense.
It's
okay.
The DAS
okay.
Building.
So we account in DHS's budget for all of its personnel. We account for the DAS charges, et cetera. So if we're anticipating that the deferred maintenance is being done on that building, which I hope it already is being done, because it's not really that new of a building. I don't know, it's, 15, 20 years old, maybe?
I don't know the exact age.
Yeah, but it's...
I don't either.
Robert Roberts building.
That's going to have to be built into the budget to do that deferred maintenance. I mean, in the sense of...
Well, of course it is.
Yeah.
See, day-to-day maintenance of buildings is in uniform rent. So we charge in the uniform rent per square foot the kind of day-to-day operational maintenance. Capital maintenance and the line between those, you probably can define better than I can. For instance, I don't know if carpets are in uniform rent, if roofs are in it, I don't think they are, but I don't know the answer to that. But
see, I would think carpets would be.
They might be.
Carpets
right.
are.
Yeah, okay.
The things that wouldn't be, I think it comes to, Senator Gerard, it's the scale of the capital reinvestment. So preventative maintenance is done, yes. Routine maintenance is done. But every component within the building, pretty much with the exception of the structure, eventually has a finite lifespan, and
yeah.
it stops working. So as part of our overall planning, and this is developed in a total cost of ownership model, is looking at how long the lifespan is of each element that makes up the entire building, and that gets planned into the overall cost of what's the needed investment to keep it at, you know, whatever it is that we say we want to keep it at. So to get to, I think, your other point of the high cost of building cheap is that if we do build cheap facilities, we pay over and over again for those facilities, not just because of, you know, their poor performance, but they also, what ends up happening in a poor facility is that the density goes down because it requires a lot more area to actually make it habitable. So, you know, the work performance goes down, and it's got all kinds of ramifications all the way down the line, health, absenteeism. So quality of facilities and making sure that we've got really robust facilities is just one of our core responsibilities.
Yeah. Is that all that information in the total cost of building model?
It is. It is. And that is the beauty of that model.
And how does the state of Washington deal with this issue that we're talking about now in terms of it, but just budgeting for the maintenance of those buildings? Is that just part of their operating budget? Or do they include it in the bonding package?
I don't know exactly. Actually, I do have the information. What I seem to recall is that they have a deferred maintenance fund. So department or the OMD or OMB Office of Management and Budget, mm-hmm. they actually are given the fund to distribute.
Gotcha.
And so, and it's done on the value of, you know, what is the need, and it's done by technicians, by, you know, technocrats. That's how they do it.
If I could, I'd really like to make sure we start talking in terms that we're all talking about the same thing.
Okay.
If you look up there, the bolded bottom sentence in that paragraph, deferred maintenance is maintenance that was not performed when it should have been performed. There is a difference between deferred maintenance and renewal and replacement.
Okay.
And quite frankly, we're just accumulating the data on our facilities to know the life cycles of the different component parts, to be able to actually lay out a future schedule for you on our current buildings. There will be both renewal and replacement for the future,
right.
and there will be a component about maintenance that was not done, that has been deferred. There's a difference between doing that activity and then figuring out how to pay for it. The financing is a different kind of animal to figure out. Mm-hmm. There'll be some debt in it, I would suspect, to maybe catch up, but there'll also be a contribution for the future. And what we'd really love to get to is a place where, whether it's in uniform rent or it's some other kind of contribution, that we are able to level and make predictable what our purchases every biennium that will be very cyclical. We'll have some biennium where we've got to build three big HVAC systems in three big buildings, and we'll spend a bazillion dollars. Other years, we'll replace a couple roofs, maybe some carpet, and we won't have to worry about it that much. But we'd love to make it predictable for agencies and for you to say, this is our contribution over the next 10 to 20 years to keep our buildings in whatever standard we pick that we want them to operate in. And that's our goal here, is to try and do that.
You've talked about those different categories. Mm-hmm. Let me go to a category that isn't up there, that isn't really... Sometimes, public and private entities mm-hmm. do this. If you don't know, it isn't a problem.
or it's a bigger problem than it is if you know.
Well, I'm just thinking of, and I don't understand it. I do think this is a very interesting group because it's actually demonstrating what I thought, that there's going to be a lot more interest in this task force than there was in the sort of statutory review of the budget process. I mean, there were a few people that are here common, but I see people that I recognize from quite a number of different trades on this side. I have some people, not all, but I have some people in the background that are interested in other possible state expenditures for capital.
We've become very popular.
Very popular for such a small little task force. But I'm wondering, and I'm not knowledgeable. There are actually people here from the building trades and other people here that are more knowledgeable sitting at the... But you have a building here. Many buildings on the mall here. There are ways in basically preventative maintenance or that you can determine if any water is inundating the structure of a building or if there's any moisture inundating the structure of a building. You can actually determine whether there's any issue where you have facilities that actually include food preparation, whether you're having any issues with various things that are residents in the beyond the bottom of the Capitol in different areas, maybe the walls also. But if you don't do that, you won't know that. I mean, I'll give an example is that one of the groups I serve on does a lot of things with energy related and all this, and it's not necessarily new technology, but they have these cameras, in a sense, guns now, which were old technology in a way, infrared, where they've been improved so you can actually go inside a building and look to see differences in temperature in a building, and you can actually see, because normally moisture lowers temperature in most cases, as long as it's not associated with some heating system, areas where water is coming into a building. So I'm just wondering, here on the Capitol Mall in particular, are these buildings being examined? I mean, on a routine basis,
So the answer for DAS's portfolio is yes.
Okay.
We are, in addition to Phil Teague, who is our director of facilities maintenance, who has an excellent team, the facility conditions assessment is looking at the entire DAS portfolio. So again, the end of November, or, sorry, end of October, beginning of November, we will be able to report that to you, and we have it.
But if I could
detailed.
Jump in, this is the work that you authorize a package for us to do in this current biennium.
Yeah.
And that's actually the work prior to that, these assessments weren't being done.
No,
to answer
true.
The co-chair's comment.
Yeah.
And what we'll be bringing to you is that was a one-time package. What we'll be bringing to you is the request to actually continue to do that for other buildings in the portfolio as well. We really wanted to take this 13-15 biennium as a pilot so that you could start to see the type of analysis we want to do and then ask you to support continuing that work off into the future. Because we've done the pilot so far with DAS on building OA and OLCC, there's a whole lot, as you saw in one of those charts, other buildings out there we haven't started yet.
Representative Buckley, we probably could get some review of what a few other states are doing in terms of this sort of basic issue that's on the agenda. In terms of how they're budgeting or how they're setting aside money for future capital needs for buildings, I think.
I was first very interested in this, the total building cost model. That
yeah.
idea intrigues me. If they've developed a funding formula that seems to work for that. I mean, the obvious thing for me, given the experience that we had in 2009, I mean, we whacked budgets and we cut deferred maintenance. I mean, because that's what you do when you're in crisis.
Kind of normal on all levels of public.
And we will be doing
private.
The same thing again at some point in the future. So I'm trying to figure out, is there a way that we can protect our assets in that circumstance
so that you're not whacking them every time the
I think we did look at Utah. They have a facilities construction and management division, and they make it it's a law that they have to appropriate like 1%,
right.
a little over 1%
right.
of the replacement value every budget cycle. They have to appropriate that money into an account. But
for all state facilities or select state facilities?
It's apparently all state-owned and institution-owned. And that's
yeah,
how they maintain
now.
A fund to fix things in the future.
And it's general fund dollars they put in there?
Whatever fund type that the buildings operate under. I mean, we just did a cursory look at what they do. But you know, it's a lot more fun to build something new than to maintain something that's already been built.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So if you have a fund like that, you would look at.
I'll sweep it, yeah.
Yeah, you would. You would.
So when you.
Appropriate it for a better and higher purpose.
Ken's absolutely right. And one of the things we've been looking at regarding finance, this other side of the equation, if you will. Is this kind of public-private partnership issue and kind of total cost of ownership over a period of time, which is kind of called the design, build, maintain, et cetera, rather than just design, build. Because of this dilemma about we love to build, we don't love to maintain so much, to me that model presents itself in a positive light because of that issue. It quite frankly is more expensive in most cases than us financing it ourselves and doing it ourselves. But our ability to be disciplined over what might be the 50-year life of a building is a really difficult thing. And so it's one of the reasons I say there's one thing about collecting data, being prudent about engineering and what's the best thing to do with our buildings. It's another thing to figure out how are we going to actually pay for this over time? How can we impose enough discipline on ourselves that we don't lose the public's asset over time? Because there are tugs and pulls from time to time, and it's really hard for us.
But there's another way, actually, also beyond this, and that is probably in the design of buildings, in terms of designing them so that the maintenance costs of them in the future are minimized.
Right.
Yep.
No,
materials.
Absolutely. I think Alice is referring to those.
I have one question. We talked about the deferred maintenance and the three levels, mm-hmm. and you, I don't, deterioration or natural aging, what did you use for that term?
Renewal and replacement.
Renewal and...
I've used
and
in the past.
An example of that would be cast iron pipe, probably. Would you know where, I mean, it rusts in the middle versus, okay, that's kind of what you're talking
sure.
about?
A number of reasons that could drive replacement of a piece of the asset. So, and one in that priority one, that might not be something is wearing out. It may be the code has been upgraded, right?
Right.
And it's been changed. And there's a safety issue if you don't upgrade. And so, or a liability if you don't. So those are, there are a lot of reasons to do those kinds of
okay.
asset changes, renewals.
Sprinkler systems.
Yeah, right.
Sure.
Upgrading for fire flow. And those
you
kinds
see
of
it?
Issues.
No.
Are you done?
Anything else for the good of the order? Boy, now Multnomah County has joined us. I wonder why they're here.
thank you for this information. Thank you, and best of luck in your department. Hope your department keeps getting along well.
Well, and as Alice said, we will be coming to you with an ask to continue yeah. this work and potentially expand some aspects of it.
It looks like
the next
I have
cycle.
A...
What's that?
Oh, go ahead.
No, I'm done.
Yeah.
Thank
looks
you.
Like I have a question from the audience. Sooner or later, this group will have to get to the level of public hearings. I don't think we're that level yet, but I will take a question.
Hi, Senator. Joe Esmer from the IBDW. Just an observation. We talked about the public-private partnership. I wonder if the private industries, the big real estate holders, some are in Portland, some are other parts of the country, have an off-the-shelf program. It's not apples to apples, but I wonder if that's something that would help you, your agencies, like CBRE, Norris Big Simpson, mm-hmm. big holders of real estate. Mm-hmm. Sure, it's not the capital, but there must be something in there. I wonder if that would help you make your decisions. That's just an observation.
So we actually are talking to those groups, Jones Lang LaSalle, Cushman Wakefield.
Yeah, yeah.
So they are advising us as well. So it's a pretty informed conversation, we hope.
And we've actually have a couple of those folks under contract to help us with both the redesigning of our lease approach and also working on these facility issues. So appreciate that suggestion.
Just a note for Claudia to know that I'm just not picking her out. I'll be glad to know to recognize other counties when they actually come to these meetings also. So. anything else for the good of the order? Do we have a tentative next meeting?
Mr. Co-Chair, we are required to submit our report to the legislature by October 15th. That is fastly approaching. The one thing I will say is we do not technically sunset, though, until the start of the next session. So as we have kind of informally talked about the ongoing nature of this discussion, that we really are only beginning to get our heads kind of wrapped around what's out there, let alone where we go next, I fully anticipate us continuing to meet after we make a preliminary report, which will largely consist of some of the issues we've had with how do we inform this discussion until we, can understand what our needs are in the state, not only in new, but in replacement and renewal, and then in deferred maintenance. And so we will have a brief meeting ahead of that reporting date to submit a report of some magnitude. It will likely be something we do by conference call. Or briefly in the Capitol, and then I would suggest that we will have a future meeting either in December around legislative days, and then maybe even take advantage. Yes, and then maybe even take advantage of January ahead of the convening of the next legislature, so as to maximize our time, and then to give a more I would say detailed account of what we need to do in the next iteration of this task force in a bill and or in a work group format that will go forward. So our work will continue. We will have a brief meeting in October with a more detailed one or two meetings to follow after that.
And just, I think our options, Mr. Rocco, could you comment if I'm off on these? Our options to continue, we can continue through December or through January because we don't sunset. After that, we could ask our presiding officers and the governor to just continue the discussion just by just agreement to continue the discussion. We could introduce a new bill to continue. I believe even in the rebalance of the 2013-15 budget, we may still have the necessity for a program change bill. We could insert it there, or we could insert it at the end of the session in the program change bill for the 2015 session. But I don't really believe that we can complete our work before the end of the next calendar year, to be honest.
I don't see any reason that you couldn't continue discussions. And as you indicate, it's a very simple thing to use a program change bill just to change the date of when the task force goes away. So there will be multiple opportunities. We can even steal somebody's bill and gut and stuff.
We would never do that.
Never do that.
We do not sweep funds. We do not sweep funds.
I'll get you a list.
And we do not actually do. We do not actually do policy in Ways and Means.
Theoretically.
Anything else for the good of the order? If not, we're adjourned. For the good of the order.